I would like to welcome to the podcast the new general manager of Merrick versus Wyszynski, Dale Talon. Oh, wait, nope, sorry. Let me take that back. Dale Talon is not the general manager of the Merrick versus Wyszynski podcast. He is actually still the director of hockey opera. Wait, nope, hold on. Nope, he's just been renamed the general manager of the podcast. Wait, shit, nope, sorry. He's no longer the general manager of the podcast.
As far as I'm concerned, Dale has always had final say on this podcast, and you know that. So I don't know where this controversy comes from. I don't know what you're getting at. I'm not. I don't understand.
To restate the last 24 hours, Darren Draeger of another network reported.
Okay. You can say TSN. Okay. Jeez, let me pass that now on this podcast.
Reported that Dale Talon had been given his power back. He got the one ring back. He put it on his finger. And he was now the guy in charge of the player personnel decisions for the Florida Panthers. And then the Florida Panthers decided to tell Elliot Friedman and anyone in Miami who would listen that that was not the case, that in fact nothing could change, that Dale always had the power in the Florida Panthers
trust. Pause on that for a second.
Yes, sir?
Nothing has changed. If by nothing has changed, that could mean one of two things. According to Vinny Viola, the owner of the Florida Panthers, a majority owner, that means that he's always had the final say, even though we know now that Vinny Viola called Tom Rowe to tell him to fire Gerard Gallant. Nothing involving Dale Talon at all.
Correct.
And then the circumstantial trade stuff and signings over the summer that Dale Talon never would have done.
Correct.
Or
Also, Dale Talon probably wouldn't have fired his own head scout.
What is it, 30 people in the last 6 months? No, I think it's like 30 that they've fired in the organization.
Yeah.
Not sure that Dale Talon would have taken the exact
Not sure out. Dale Talon, unless Dale Talon is taking some kind of Jekyll and Hyde potion in which he turns into Doug Talon and all of a sudden fires all of the people he hires. I don't think he did that, no.
So business as usual can either mean that he's in charge or he's not in charge, depending on who you talk to in the Florida Panthers organization. This is an unmitigated disaster right now. And I would submit has been for some time. And this is what happens when you are duplicitous about someone like Dale Talon and what has actually gone on with him.
Right.
Remember when he was kicked upstairs? Oh, no. Dale still got final say because you want to placate the fans that still love him and that look at him and say he is the one that built this team.
Right.
So when you're not honest about, so much of this comes back to being duplicitous about Dale Talon's position.
Right. And the position they're in now is this report comes out. And listen, Draeger's getting it from somebody who wants to make the Panthers look bad because the Panthers have pissed off most of the hockey establishment. They've handed the keys over to non-hockey people. They've gone analytics in a time where, you know, if you go too far to analytics, you're going to be ridiculed by the establishment.
I don't think that's true. I just think going public and doing victory laps about it is what soured people
Could be.
On it. I don't think going that direction is because a lot of teams have gone that direction, but they haven't spent the whole time on Twitter high-fiving each other about it.
But the difference is that when teams have gone in that direction, like there's a big difference between hiring a poker pro to be part of your front office or hiring a blogger to be part of your front office. Yeah. They turned the keys over to non-hockey people. That's the sin. They did that and then they kicked a really, really, really well-liked hockey guy upstairs.
Did Tampa get this when they hired the curbside lawyer Jay Feaster and won a Stanley Cup?
No, but they sure as shit got it when Oren Kulas bought the team.
Or at least Oren Kulas played hockey, though.
And they hired Barry Melrose.
Okay, well, but then again, he had a hockey background. Oren Kulas played hockey. Len Barry played hockey. Barry Melrose played hockey. They were still like establishment hockey guys. So this idea of bringing in the outsider isn't new. I think what soured a lot of people, honestly, I think is the self-congratulating that went on. And the, oh, look how brilliant we are for doing this. And throwing it in everyone's face without actually ever doing anything.
Right. And that's the thing that's really paint them in a corner. Like, honestly, there was only good things that could happen from a PR perspective by saying Dale Talon was going to take a more active role in the team again when the team is floundering. You got the interim coach. People's confidence is at a low again with the Panthers after riding high last year. Like, only good things come from being like, oh, hey, the guy who built the division-winning team last year, we're going to have him be more involved now. But when you – if that had just been the end of the story, I think the narrative changes about the Panthers. The problem is – they know damn well that he doesn't have that power anymore. Yep. And they don't want to piss in the coffee cup of Eric Joyce or Steve Weimer or Rowe. They don't want to do that to those guys because those are the guys that are now in power. So if you let the story linger that Talon's coming to ride in on the white horse like Gandalf to save the day, then you'll make those guys look like idiots, 27 games into the season.
Yep.
Here's my big problem with it, Jeff Merrick.
Okay,
my big problem with it is this. All right. New people come in all the time and hire the people they want in the jobs, okay? You are completely – listen, it's happening at Yahoo Canada. Yahoo Canada's got a new guy coming in. Some people leave. Some people come in. It happens all the time. It's just how it is, right? So I've got no problem if the new regime comes in and they're like, we didn't hire Dale Talon. Dale Talon doesn't share our militaristic philosophy. We want to put in our new people in management. That's great. And you know what? They did it before the summer. Okay? But if Gerard Gallant is not your guy, okay, you already showed you had the stones to move Dale Talon upstairs and out of the GM spot.
But not really. If you're going to do it. Not that way.
All right.
That's a halfway measure.
That's a halfway measure, but he's no longer the GM. They made a change. They didn't make the change with the coach. And now you've made the change with the coach 22 games into the season. And that's the problem. And listen, I was pointed towards a piece by Jason Botchford that he wrote about this situation.
The one on the Probbies? That was really good.
The Probbies had really some inside information. And he wrote, a year ago, right around U.S. Thanksgiving, or Thanksgiving to the rest of us, the Panthers ownership and front office held a summit. The team was foundering. The Panthers were either at 500 or below, near the bottom of the division, and there wasn't really a lot of hope. There was consideration given to firing Gallant back then. But the group came out of the meetings with a series of recommendations to help the coach. Some were analytics-based, and others were simply common sense. Bottom line is that Gallant went along with those. He came out of the meeting. He went along with them, and not coincidentally, the season was turned around. So what happened? Well, he kind of went a little deaf this year. Instead, things went the other way this season. Gallant was more closed off to ideas after his team's success. Being closed off created a problem for the organization that wants to operate with group thinking.
Here's some insight to counter that to some effect. It wasn't as if it was a complete new direction and they were all on the same page about it from day one. And you saw that at the trade deadline when the Florida Panthers picked up Uri Hoedler and Teddy Purcell, and the analytics side wanted to go aggressively after Shane Prince. That's who they wanted.
Who, of course,
big time.
Hurt them in the playoffs, which is kind of ironic.
Hurt them in the playoffs. Certainly did. Whole Islanders team. They should have, a team that Florida should have beaten. Which infuriated that ownership to no end. And the players were made aware of it. The coaching staff was made aware of it. And the soon-to-be ex-general manager was made aware of it.
Made aware of that they should have beaten the Islanders.
And how displeased they were that they weren't. That they didn't.
Now here's the real question. Because this is the thing I've been... The real reason that I have a problem with them doing Gallant in season like they did. How much of this stuff in the Botchford piece is gospel to the players? How much do they actually know? Because if I'm a player on that team, I'm thinking to myself, the guy that I kind of like, who led us to a division title, got turfed 22 games into a season in which we didn't have Jonathan Huberdeau, yep. Our goaltending hadn't started playing well yet, and we lost, we had some pretty significant roster turnover from a division championship team. So if I'm a player on that team, I'm a little despondent right now. And that was my first thought with the Talon stuff yesterday, which is you hear Dale Talon's going to come back and have a more significant role. You're pretty happy about that because you know what Dale Talon did? He bought, like, all those players to the team. So I thought it was a really sort of shrewd, calculated don't worry, you're still in good hands, move to a collection of players that have no confidence right now. But in actuality, it was nothing.
But there's some of those players that have had, like, you look at Aaron Ekblad, okay? Drafted by Dale Talon, you know, scouted by his crew, drafted by him, welcomed to the organization. But who did the Aaron Ekblad extension? Eric Joyce and Steve Warrior.
Eric Joyce, yeah. Well, that's because they decided to help Dale by taking away
he's too busy
contract
to worry about silly little things like franchise changing contracts.
Yeah, giving contracts out, managing the cap, these are things that should not trouble someone in charge of hockey personnel.
Yeah. You know who I'm curious about more than anybody else on this team right now?
Who's that?
Roberto Luongo. And I'll tell you why.
He smashed his lumber in anger the other day.
Man, if he would have caught someone with that, look at
it. Oh, yeah. He smashed his lumber in anger, and then all of a sudden Dale Talon's having meetings with Vinny Viola. So, yeah, I'm a little bit worried about Luongo, too.
But here's why I'm worried about Luongo. Because here's someone who can see the clubhouse from his hole right now. And the one thing that he is probably focused on, I would imagine, would be the Hall of Fame. And the one thing standing in the way of him in the Hall of Fame is Stanley Cup. Like, he's picked up nods and awards internationally in the NHL all along the way. But the one thing that might legitimately hold him back from the Hall of Fame is the Stanley Cup. And when I saw that against Minnesota, and you know his record against Minnesota, even though Tom Rowe wants to call it a stupid question, the record against that team is just horrible for Luongo. I'm thinking to myself, you know, last year, Luongo's on a 100-point team. This year it's chaos. The coach is dismissed. It's controversial. You don't really know who's in charge. It's kind of this loosey collaboration of Rowe and Joyce and Warrior, and no one really knows where the buck stops, and that includes the players. And he might be looking at this saying, I'm finally in a situation where I want to be. I've wanted to go back to Florida, and I want to win a Stanley Cup here. And I'm getting farther away from it than I ever thought I would be. This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Although you also have to remember that he signed up to just go back home. That's part of it, too.
Yep. I get that.
There's going to be a part of him that's going to be all right with going back.
Well, once it was obvious that he's getting out of there and he was being fumbled by the Vancouver Canucks. That was the destination. But I really do believe that a guy like him, motivation is Stanley Cup, A, B, Hall of Fame.
Well, the Canucks and the Panthers are arguably the two most mismanaged teams in hockey right now. So maybe the constant is Luongo.
but here's the thing. I would make the argument that Vancouver is paying for what happened with the administration before them.
Oh, sure.
Like a billion times over.
Mm-hmm.
Like no one's going to accuse, you know, Jim Benning right now of being, you know, Bill Torrey or Sam Pollock. But still, man, they are being handcuffed for what's happened before. But anyway, back to the Panthers. This one continues to take more and more bizarre turns. This one continues to leave us shaking our heads. And we're just observers. Like, we're not involved in it. Imagine being a player. Imagine being on that team and going through this right now. And tonight they play Winnipeg. And then they have Colorado. What if they don't beat Colorado? What if Line A goes off for four? And then they lose to Colorado. Like, I know they're getting bad goaltending. They're outshooting teams. And their power play is an issue. But what if they lose to Winnipeg and Colorado?
I don't even know.
What then? Hire Gerard back so you have someone to fire?
I feel so bad for Colorado, by the way. We've talked a lot about Colorado on this show, and we have sort of a love-hate with them. But, like, you talk about teams that just got royally boned this offseason. I mean, it's a bad hockey team, and they entered the season in utter chaos. And it's all there on the ice. I was watching it against the Flyers last night. It's all there on the ice. It's basically the Oilers. It's a bunch of skill guys on a team with bad coaching, bad structure, no defense. The only difference is that they had a better goalie now than the Oilers had during the Taylor Hall years.
I don't know. I'd still like a save out of Varlamov. I know there was a 51 against the Maple Leafs on Sunday, but more times than not, give me a save. But still, we don't even know about their forwards yet. I know their bottom six has always been an issue. John Mitchell coming back last week helps. But I don't even think we know about the forwards yet until you have to get the puck to them.
Are you in the Adrian Dater break up the core camp now?
No. No, I'm not.
Here's the difficult question for the Colorado people that want them to break up the core. If that's the case, do you have the ability to leave your body, have an out-of-body experience, leave your body, float up to the ceiling as a spirit, and really take a look at this thing without looking through burgundy-colored eyes and say that Joe Sakic can't be the guy to rebuild the team?
This is a team that, it's funny because I was just on Dater's podcast yesterday. This is a team that has, I would submit, never recovered from Ryan O'Reilly. And what they got for Ryan O'Reilly from the Buffalo Sabres is nowhere close to what they lost. Nikita Zadorov and Mikhail Grigorenko. For Ryan O'Reilly.
I get that. And I know Dater is a huge O'Reilly fan.
You may not have liked the businessman Ryan O'Reilly, but how do you not? I don't know, I'm biased. I love Ryan O'Reilly too. How do you not love the player?
You have to love the player, but the problem is that I'm still convinced the player didn't love the team.
I don't think the player cared very much how the team treated him. Regardless, hang on. If you're a professional businessman, do you have to like someone in order to do business with them?
I think
the answer is no. Business is done, you have to forget it. Colorado couldn't.
I think that it was a mutual animosity society.
But what was the animosity? The animosity, I can't believe it. Here we are, 2:16, we're still arguing about the Ryan O'Reilly offer sheet. What was the animosity? The animosity was the offer sheet.
Sure, the animosity was the offer sheet, and you know, the way he was treated by the team. But you have to remember that, like, look, I know you're going to put this all on Colorado, but it was still at the time a player who thought he was worth more than he was. You have to admit that.
You're worth whatever you can get, and he got the money from Calgary.
He got the money from Calgary that he wasn't going to get from Colorado.
So what do you want?
The money was ridiculous.
Then you've decided to move on, and then where was your mistake? Not getting value for Ryan O'Reilly.
Listen, if it's two separate issues. On the one hand, it was never going to work out for him in Colorado because neither side liked each other.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it was a terrible trade.
Okay.
It was a god-awful trade.
Listen, that is something that happened so many years ago. We need to move on to more current affairs. The Rick Nash trade from Columbus to the New York Rangers, Greg. We've run out of things to say, so we're just going to do old podcasts now.
I saw the Rangers against the Blackhawks this week.
Yep.
What a funny little team those Rangers are. They've got scoring through that lineup, but I don't know if I trust it. I trust the Kreider line, but I don't really trust the rest of the offense. They're a funny little team. Boy, let's talk about the Metro. I guess we should probably talk about that a little bit. The fact that in the last 10 days, the top five teams in the Metropolitan Division are 22-2-0.
If you look at it, here's what you have to do. The other day it was like 26. I'm doing it off the top of my head because I wanted to do it on TV, but we couldn't get it. I'm going to try to do it on TV tonight. Consensus generally is, outside of the Metro, and you know, people will bang the drum for the Central. St. Louis Blues, Chicago Blackhawks, that's the best. Look at the head-to-head between the Metro and the Central. Last I checked, it was like 26-6-3 in favor of the Metro. It is a curb stomping. It is destruction. What the Metropolitan Division is doing. It is the class of the NHL in the year of the Lord 2016, period.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
The Flyers are rolling in a way that I frankly didn't think they could. I mean, Voracek's been insane.
Yeah.
Simmons is having a top 10 season amongst players right now.
Voracek, Giroux, Provorov's got it figured out and he's driving it.
Yep.
Steve Mason. And here's the interesting thing about the Metro. The Caps go and reel off, what is it, 4 in a row?
Yeah.
Don't make up any ground.
No. Oh, well, that's the thing, too. It's like, look, the Flyers have done a good job getting right back into it, right? But, like, at the end of the day, everybody else is keeping pace. Like, you put together 10 wins in a row in this league, you should be able to do what the Panthers did last year,
yeah,
right? But
so
instead, the Flyers are still 2 points back of the Penguins. It's insane.
Yeah, man, it's good.
Washington will be fine. Pittsburgh is obviously Pittsburgh. I mean, and, you know, you're starting to see, like last night, I mean, like, Sheary scores, Russ scores, and you're just reminded, oh, right, yeah, all of these guys now have experience to go along with that talent.
It's an interesting thing. I was talking to someone yesterday and looking at the Crosby. Here again, that's what I'm hoping we can get to on TV tonight at 6:30 Eastern. On Sportsnet, it's Hockey Central with yours truly. If you look at Crosby's shooting percentage, as much has been made of it, is 27%. And I think his highest ever in his career is 18. So he'll probably come back down, but maybe not by that much. But where he's lacking now is in the assists. Like, his stat line is starting to turn into the Cy Young stat line. Okay? Which is fine, whatever. He's getting the points. He's actually picking up the same amount of points. Like, I think his point production is almost identical to what it's been for his career. The only difference now is people on his line are shooting at 8%. So Crosby's firing it up at 27. His wingers, or anyone else on the ice, when he's on the ice with them, are shooting at 8. Crosby's scoring goals. He's not picking up assists. The point production is the same. We're making a big deal about it because, wow, look at the goals, and goals are spectacular. But if you look at the point production, it's the same.
Yeah. It's a shade higher.
It's
1.38 points per game, which is actually his highest season was 2012-13, which is 1.56. So he's ahead of his pace the previous 2 years, but his goal scoring, Jesus,
it's pretty cool.
His previous high in goal scoring average was a 0.78. Okay, that was in the lockout. It was 41. Not the lockout. It was 41 games in 2010-2011. He's at 0.88 right now. It's crazy. By the way,
goals are sexy, man. Score goals, kids. Hey, listen. Assists, yeah, that looks nice and all. Pile up the points. Goals are sexy. You want to ring the bell? Score goals, guys.
Chicks dig the long ball. It's a miracle that Adam Oates even got in the Hall of Fame, being a fancy assist boy. The Metro is pretty much locked. The wild card could be locked too, unless
it's all Metro. Come on.
But here, let me put this out here. Okay. I know they're way far back. 7 points off the pace from a playoff seed in the Atlantic.
Are you going New Jersey on me?
Oh, hell no. The Devils aren't that good.
Carolina?
No. What happens? I put this out on with my other podcasting husband yesterday.
Speaking of duplicitous.
What happens when the Buffalo Sabres finish third in the Atlantic?
Oh.
And Jack Eichel wins the Hart?
I am loving watching Jack Eichel.
You see, that's the
thing
about
Eichel.
Oh, it's
so good. That'd be awesome. That'd be a great story.
That's what we were all hoping for. Was
yeah.
That when he got healthy,
yeah, man.
He would throw his hat in the ring, watching Line A, watching Matthews, watching Connor.
Yeah.
And be like, hey,
yo,
see this rosy-cheeked, curly-haired boy over here? Don't forget about me.
See that curl into the middle the other night with the shot that hugged the post?
Oh,
and made
insane.
That beautiful pipe and in sound? Oh, dark suit goal right there.
Yeah, no, I think it's great that we have all of these amazing young star players in the league. It's just a shame that we don't have fighting anymore to protect them.
That is for a conversation that will take far too much longer, far too long for this scant couple of minutes we have before John Scott comes on the show.
Yeah, we kind of buried the lead. John Scott's going to be on the show today.
I know.
Now, you've talked to John
a couple times. Yeah, went out to dinner with him in the summer.
You went to dinner with him. Yeah.
Oh, he hates you, man. Oh, you're in for it. Oh, yeah. Loves me. I'm a great guy. I'm just a great guy.
That's par for the course. There's only one guy in this business that likes me more than you, and it's Dave Maloney.
Yeah, don't ask the OHL question again. Stay away from that one.
But he's okay with what we did, or?
Yeah. Okay. I think so. Well, we'll find out. Right? We'll find out here in a couple of minutes when John joins us. Okay. But I'm with you on Eichel, man. That's been a lot of fun to have back in. And we haven't talked for so long. We haven't talked about Columbus. We haven't talked about the Habs. We did talk about Philadelphia.
We
barely scratched the Western Conference and what the Minnesota Wild are doing right now.
I struggle with Columbus because obviously I don't like their coach and I don't like being wrong. But they're playing really well.
Yeah.
The only thing that could possibly subvert them is if Bobrovsky's fragile. And he doesn't look like he, like, I don't want to put the hex on it, but like, even going back to World Cup, I was talking.
I know
to the
everybody's
Russians.
Waiting for it. I know.
Everybody's waiting. Well, just by virtue of his history, but like even going back to the World Cup, like the one thing you heard even from the Russians was he's in the best shape of his career.
Look, dude, the best thing we can hope for is again Columbus. How long have we been saying this? Columbus makes the playoffs and they play Pittsburgh somewhere along the way. I want it opening round. How good was it last time they met?
Yeah. No.
Now you got a shot of skill with the Blue Jackets as well. Now all of a sudden they're a better team than they were the last time they were in and played the Penguins, and gave them everything they wanted, specifically 87.
No, you want that because you want there to be those moments for that fan base where everybody comes together and they get like the best thing for them would be beating the Penguins, wouldn't it?
Oh, defending cup champs, beat him in the first round? Totally. That's a great storyline.
Bob McKenzie on Darren Drager's report, by the way.
Myrtle said he went off pretty good.
He backs it up and says, we don't make stuff up.
Let me ask you and everyone listening right now who you would believe. If I said, okay, choose one. Florida Panthers ownership or Darren Drager?
Well,
I know where I am. 7 days a week. With Dregs.
Oh, okay. Because I.
It's a pretty easy one.
If you had said Bob, I mean, like, I trust Bob more than I trust my own father. So. But Drager, here's the thing. I don't think anyone thinks that Drager makes stuff up.
No.
But I do think that, and I like Darren, but I do think that throughout his career, unquestionably, Darren Drager has been a megaphone for certain people without editorial oversight. And I think that in this case, it's entirely plausible that someone's got his ear that doesn't like the Panthers, that doesn't like the way they did Dale Talon, that doesn't like the way they did Gerard Gallant, and is using Drager to voice that. It's completely plausible because, dude, come on. Like,
I don't know about that one. I don't know about that one. Who would that be, an agent?
I don't know. Oh, I don't know. I'm not saying that I know. No. I'm saying that I think that Darren is a guy who has in the past been more.
On that because the MVP is standing by.
Joining us now on the line, National Hockey League All-Star MVP, John Scott.
Ready to give Greg Wyshynski the business. How are you today, John Scott?
I'm not waiting around, fellas. Let's get this started.
That's right. Enough of this. Drop the puck already.
John, you don't. You don't have any opinions about the integrity of journalism around the reporting of the Florida Panthers?
It's a very sophisticated conversation you're jumping into now about the nature of reporting in 2016.
But hold on, John. Like, let me ask you that though. Like, because this is the point I brought up before. Like, if you're in that room with the Panthers, and you win a division title, and then your coach gets turfed 22 games into the next season, what are your thoughts? I mean, are you cognizant of things happening behind the scenes, or are you looking at this at face value and saying, you know, what the hell's going on here?
No, you know something's up, and you want to know why, and I think the vets are probably more pissed off than anybody. But, as this, you know, it is what it is. It's a business. And the same thing kind of happened with me in Buffalo because I was with Pat LaFontaine and Ted Nolan, and they kind of had the wool pulled over their eyes, and that's why Patty quit, and that whole debacle happened with the new owner and the new GM and everything, so... There's always drama, and it's just the players, you try to keep your nose out of it, but you can't help but kind of wonder, and you get invested in people, so I'm sure the players are a little pissed.
You know, that leads me to a question I always like asking hockey players. See, I assume that I know about, on a good day, maybe 15%, maybe 20% of what's going on. On a good day, John. from a hockey player's point of view, when you look at the media, how much do you say they actually know what's really going on from your perch? I think in my case, it's about 15%. When you look at the media, you say, yeah, these guys know about this much of what's really going on.
You'd be surprised. Some guys, some teams, the media knows a lot more than you'd think. But like some GMs are really good friends with guys in the media, and they give them all these just information. And some players like to talk to the media more than they talk to their wives, it seems like. So it's hit or miss. But, for the most part, they don't know much. But you'd be surprised. Every once in a while, there's a few guys who seem to know more than they should.
All right. Well, listen. Congratulations on the career. The Players Tribune thing was great, as per usual. I guess my question is did you think that you'd parlay last season into something else? Did you have opportunities to do that, or did you just kind of figure out that
playing?
Maybe it was as far as playing? Yeah, did you have offers from places?
Yeah, I could have played this year, but it was going to be. I really only wanted a few teams, and once those teams were gone, I could have played, you know, obviously a two-way anywhere, and then a couple one-ways we were sniffing around. There was no hard offers, but I'm sure if I would have really went for it and just, like, really did the hard sell like my agent usually does, I could have probably got a job, but, yeah, it just didn't happen, so I just decided it's time.
Well, you clearly don't want to. You clearly didn't want a two-way contract because that was going to seriously impact your All-Star eligibility, given the John Scott rule.
Well, I mean, yeah, I didn't want to deal with the whole All-Star thing again because who knows what would have happened this year? The whole vote. Well, they would have changed the voting if I was still in the league, like even more drastically for sure. But yeah.
It would have been like guys named John can't be in the All-Star game.
That's right.
Yeah. Typically, yeah, it would have been that.
Guys with two first names cannot be in the All-Star game. That's just the rule that we have. That's the way it's going to be. Hey, take us back to last year, because this was, I mean, and you and I talked about this over the summer and have talked about it since a couple of different times, John. Take us back to the beginning of the John Scott All-Star campaign last year, when you first heard about it, what you thought, and then curious, at what point did it really seem real to you? Like, at what point did you say to yourself, holy shit, this is different than what I thought it was. This is really could be a thing.
You can swear on this?
Go for it.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Please. Well, I'm just surprised. Wow. At first I was pissed off. I didn't really care for it. I was just like, okay, big joke. Like, here we go. Everyone's trying to get me into the game, blah, blah, blah. But then, yeah, like we've talked about, I kind of got excited a few weeks in when I started talking to other players and former tough guys and guys like that, and they were like, listen, this is this could be cool, you know, don't just kind of throw it away just because you're pissed off or a couple doofuses in Toronto started this thing, like really go for it.
Well, it was for truth's sake, it was one doofus in Toronto, actually Stouffville, and one in New York. So
yeah,
it was
an American doofus.
Two countries. Well, that does lead to it, because I get this, John, still to this day on Twitter. I still get this all the time. Oh, John Scott hates you. Oh, John Scott can't stand you guys. So just put it out there. Does John Scott hate Jeff and Greg?
No, not at all. I don't hate many people, and I wouldn't put you guys on that list at all. I'm obviously friends with you, Jeff. Greg, I think we met once or maybe twice. I don't even remember.
We've met twice. We met at the outdoor game in Santa Clara when you had your kids and stuff. It was really cute. And then we met at the elevator at the All-Star game when I said that a lot of people said that I look like you, and then you kind of indicated that you're much prettier than I am.
I like Jeff. Greg, obviously, you know, it is what it is. You cause a lot of shit, but you know, you're doing your job, and I respect that. So it's no, I don't hate you guys at all.
But as far as the starting shit, like the thing about you, if you listen back to the show, obviously we disparaged your playing skills. There's no getting around that. But as far as you being the guy, there was never a moment when Jeff and I didn't think that you weren't the perfect guy for it. Because it's not simply just voting in a fighter, right, or somebody like that. It's voting in the guy who, as we've often said, wore a T-shirt depicting himself scoring a goal. Like, you were the perfect dude to soak it all in, take it all in, appreciate the experience, which is ultimately what I think happened.
Yeah, I've never taken myself seriously at all. I think, you know, if someone gave me a free T-shirt and I wore it, like, I'll do that to this day. If you give me a shirt, I'll probably wear it the next day. So I honestly don't care about that stuff. So, yeah, it worked out. I think a lot of people wouldn't have handled it like I did just because I don't really take offense to much. So it's, it worked out good. And I'm glad you guys started it. It friggin' changed my life, that's for sure. Like, it's been a whirlwind of a year, and it's still happening to this day. I just read like a stinking movie script last week. Like, it's nuts. So
how's the script? Did Mitch do a good job with the script?
It's really good. Like, I was going into it being like, oh, it's going to be like every other article. It's going to like just be boring, but it was like really good.
Yeah. And do Jeff and I have roles in it, or have they combined us into one loathsome basement-dwelling character?
You know, you're definitely mentioned. I don't know if it's, like, going to be an on-screen thing or if it's just, like, because, yeah, you're a big part of the story. So I know you're mentioned in the script, and now I don't know if there's going to be characters associated with that or if it's just, like, two bloggers in Toronto or two bloggers that, you know, they have a podcast, or if they'll actually show you talking about, you know.
Well, John, you can have Mitch get in touch with my agent. I'm sure you'll find my rates very reasonable, considering the gravity of this role.
Forget your rates, man. Like, John, if there's money in the budget, may I suggest Ryan Gosling?
This is called pro bono.
Yeah, this is called our favorite price, $3.99. It's the media price. Yeah. You don't pay for anything. It's the Contra Castle that we all live in. Hey, speaking of which, though, and you told me a little bit about this in the summer post All-Star game. After that, when you became, you know, national celebrity, transcending hockey was a headline that sort of jumped off, you know, even the sports pages in some respect. What's the best swag you got? Like, surprisingly, something just shows up at your doorstep.
I got a lot of booze. Lots of heavy duty liquor showed up. So that was always nice. Like, I got a nice bottle of Johnny Walker with my name engraved on it. I got some vodka in the shape of a hockey stick. I got a bunch of beer. That was always fun. But the thing that we've used the most was strollers.
Right.
So a big stroller company, Upa Baby, they contacted us. They're like, hey, what do you guys want? We saw you at the All-Star game. Love to help you out. And they're just go on our website and pick whatever you wanted. So we got, like, the works on a double stroller and the double car seats and all this stuff, and they just hooked us up, and it's been great.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
I know. Not too exciting. Car seats and strollers. Hey, I'm super lame.
Dude, man, booze and baby stuff. Don't worry. I've been there. I know it. It's okay.
I know.
Did you get to keep the giant check?
Oh.
No. I don't even know where it went once they gave it back. I don't even know who I gave it to. I know. I asked about it, too, and no one really got back to me.
Oh,
that'd have been cool to have in the basement.
Got to track that down.
Did the Hall of Fame get in touch with you about anything? I remember talking
they
to
did.
They did. So what did they get? What did the Hall of Fame get?
They got a helmet and a jersey, and then I had to sign like some authenticate it.
Oh yeah.
They sent some papers to my house, and so I had to sign off some waiver and like to make sure it was my stuff, saying I gave it to them, so it's the real stuff they got right out. They literally came in the locker room after the game. They said, okay, what do you want, your jersey? You want your gloves? You want your helmet? What do you want? Well, because we're taking some stuff. And so I had to, like, right on the spot there, I said, okay, I want my gloves, and I'll take my black jersey. So they took, like, my helmets, my pants, my other jersey, like, everything else. It was ransacked me.
Let me ask you a question about the All-Star experience. How difficult was it, or how long did it take you to trust the NHL after you got there? Or did it even happen? Like, I mean, obviously all that stuff happened over the phone with the you know, think about your kids and all that stuff that you talked about in the Players Tribune. But, like, did it take a while before there was an establishment of trust between you and the NHL that they weren't going to, like, all of a sudden pull the rug out from under you?
Well, I knew it was too late, right? Like, I was there, and there's nothing they could do about it. So I didn't go in there saying, oh gosh, they're gonna do something to fuck with me. I didn't expect that, but I still, you know, it's the league. I didn't like him before the All-Star game. I didn't like him after it. Like, just being in negotiations with them, like the lockout and stuff, I think it's the league. They're greasy, you know. They just try to look out for number one. That's the owners. So I just kind of honestly just ignored them as much as I could.
So I'm going to guess that the answer to this is yes, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think that all of this happened, all of the success of the All-Star game, you becoming the story you did, the ratings going up, everything else, happened despite them?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
There's John, there's an interesting email that we got from a guy by the name of Matt Reeler, who's a longtime listener here of this podcast, really thoughtful guy. He says, could you ask John Scott what the most impactful piece of advice he received during the process? That's the All-Star. The most impactful piece of advice you got during the entire process.
Oh man.
Cause I'm sure you mentioned like some of the, you know, some tough guys saying, yeah, go and do it. I'm sure other guys around, I'm sure Brent Burns was two thumbs up. Like, who said something that really hit home for you?
Yeah. Obviously all those guys like, just do it. You know, they just really, that's all they were saying. But it was honestly right a week before the game when I still wasn't sure if I was going to go, and I was kind of on the fence. They just announced that I could go, but I was still like, you know what, screw this. Like, they did all this stuff. And then Matthew Schneider called me, and I had dealt with him through the NHLPA. He works for them, and we kind of had grown this somewhat relationship. I would consider him a friend. And he called me, and we had a good conversation. I was sitting in an airport somewhere, and he just said, listen, we think you should go. And I was like, no way, I'm not going. Like, enough's enough. Like, I just don't want to deal with it anymore. And he's like, listen, this is going to be such a big opportunity. I've been to many All-Star games, and it's just a blast. If anything, you can go and, like, have fun and just enjoy it, you know, bring the family along. And we talked for a solid 20 minutes about just how the All-Star game itself was kind of a joke, so no one's really expecting anything. You can go and have fun. All the guys want you to go. And he just kind of broke it down where it's like, you know, fuck everyone else, just do this for you. And I was like, all right, I'm in. And he kind of turned it right there, convinced me, like, all right, I'm going. So that was the one guy who I look back, I'm like, wow, that was cool. He kind of talked me off the ledge.
And how much did having Brent Burns there help, too, and a couple of your Sharks boys?
Well, just the being there and being comfortable. If they weren't there, I would have been super awkward, I think, the whole time. Like, I obviously knew all of them, but I was close with Burnsy and Pavelski, and just having them on my team was huge, because if they weren't there, I would have been super uncomfortable, you know? Like, it's just, they made it so easy in the locker room. Burnsy's just like, the guy has no filter, so he really broke the ice super early and just kind of had everyone loose, and that was huge. And then Dustin Byfuglien was in my room, too, and me and him are good buddies. We skate with each other in the summer, and it's funny, I think years prior, they used to drink before the game, and they used to get buckled before the game, and so there was not a beer to be found near the locker room. And so I was, like, in the locker room before the game, and I was like, or before the skills competition, I was like, God, I need a beer or something. I need to, you know, loosen up. And I was looking everywhere for beer in the coolers and the fridges. Like, I couldn't find anything. Finally, I had to, like, track down one of the rink attendants who worked for the Predators. I was like, listen, I'll give you $50. Just go give me a case of beer. So they had it. So they got a case, and me and Buff were the only ones drinking. So we were just sitting there kind of having some beers before the skills comp, and everyone else was just doing their warm-ups and stuff, and we were just relaxing. So that helped, too, before the skills comp.
What about the game itself? Was it like scoring that goal? And then I'm going to ask you about the Matt Duchene back check on your second goal. But we'll start with the first goal. Describe that for us.
Just kind of, yeah. I didn't even realize it honestly happened. I just jumped on the ice and went to the net, really. Like, I kind of got the puck along the boards and panicked a little bit and didn't really know where to go with it. And I was like, don't make a turnover, a bad play in the first play. Just don't do it. And I luckily made a decent backhanded pass to, I think it was Burnsy in the slot, and then I just went to the net, and he's so good. Like, he just fired off my stick. And it was going wide, but luckily Rene kind of slid back into the net and banked it into the net. So I was like, all right, this was like, it's going to be my night tonight.
I'll never forget it, because I was in the kitchen at that point, and my wife was watching the game, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like this shriek, he scored. I think it was he effing scored, specifically. Coming out of my wife's. What about the second one? You're on the breakaway, and I guess I think it was DeShane, gives you sort of a couple of courtesy taps on the pants to make it look like he's back checking on you. But walk us through goal number two, John.
Yeah, just in our zone, I saw Burns, he'd get the puck in front of the net, and I knew he was going to go behind to kind of corral it, and I just left. I just busted out of the zone and hoped for a pass, and he gave me one, and I just kind of turned. I knew DeShane was coming, and yeah, he kind of gave me a courtesy tap either side. I just tried to protect it, and I had a breakaway earlier that game. I went 5-hole on Rene, and he stopped me, and Dubnyk thought I was going to go 5-hole again. He told me after the game, he's like, oh, I thought you were going to go there again. And I saw a little room upstairs, so I just went for it, and it went in.
Snipe, snipe. All right, so one of the great things about the All-Star experience was the fact that it marked this moment for all of us that love fighting and love fighters to kind of celebrate it. Like, you know, it's no secret that the enforcer role is kind of gone by the wayside in this league a little bit for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask you, like, do you ever see it boomeranging back? Like, do you ever see the opportunity for fighting to rise a little bit? And the only thing I could think of is that maybe if it's a case where you have all these young star players and all of a sudden there becomes a need for it again. Or do you think that we're in a place of player safety and litigation and everything where fighting is just going to have to be a diminished part of the game?
Yeah, it's tough to say. Like, I think there'll always be a place for it, but who knows? If they keep these rules in and they keep, like, really cracking down, I think it'll go. But honestly, I think it's an enjoyment factor, too. I think the fans enjoy it. And there might, like, when it's gone for good, I think, who knows, maybe there might be a dip in viewership. I know everyone loves it. When there's a fight, everyone stands up, everyone's glued to the fight. You know, when the game's going on, people are distracted, this and that, but when there's a fight, there's 20,000 people watching those two guys fight. Like, it's very entertaining. And then when it comes to the hockey part, like, I think it'll come back just because I think you're going to see the game change, and it's going to go maybe too far to the way of, like, the pest and the rat and the new type of fourth liner they have now. It's a guy who's a pest. He can skate, but he's also kind of a piece of garbage. And, like, do you want him or do you want a guy who plays honest and he's a goon? He might not be as fast. He might not be as skilled, but, you know, he's not going to break your wrist or take your knees out or, you know, chirp or face wash you. It's going to be a fight and it's going to be over with. So it's kind of like pick your poison. And I think it'll come back. I don't think it'll come back to the extent of the big, big boys like me and Steve McIntyre and Peros and, like, the really true heavyweights. I think it'll be guys like Matt Martin or even Ryan Reeves in St. Louis. He can move around the ice pretty well and he's really tough. So those guys will stick around just because they – you know, they kind of evolved, and I think that's where the league will stay, hopefully.
We had a survey done on Puck Daddy recently that came out this week about fighting, and we found out that we asked, would banning fights change the way you watch the NHL? And 24% said they'd watch more hockey. 25% said they'd watch less hockey if there was a fighting ban. And 51% said that there'd be no impact on their viewership if there was a fighting ban. So it's not this idea that getting rid of fighting is all of a sudden going to invite a whole bunch of new fans or casual fans into the tent, I think, is a bit misguided.
No, I don't. I hope that wasn't his intent the whole time because that's pretty silly. But, yeah, I don't think it'll – I don't know. Yeah, I don't think it'll get more viewers by any means. If anything, you're going to lose viewers, you know? Like, someone who doesn't watch hockey all of a sudden, oh, there's no fighting, we need to watch hockey now. No, it's not – a case. It's like, oh, there's people who like watching hockey for the fights, and if the fights are gone, they're going to be like, well, it's not as exciting anymore. Maybe I won't stay up and watch that game on the West Coast, or maybe I won't go watch a game live because people like to fight. So,
hey, man, that Habs-Boston game the other night had basically no goals, but a lot of big hits and a fight as well with Shaw and Krug, and people were loving that. I want to personalize this, John. We know that fans love it. Did you love it? Did you always, because I talked to so many guys like, oh man, I remember talking to Mayday about, you know, after the Kim Janssen situation, he said, yeah, I knew that I had to fight Bugard and my wife tortured me. It was a Sunday game. My wife tortured me all week long. Every time I'd walk in the kitchen, she'd play Sunday Bloody Sunday and I'd say, turn that off. And she'd just like revel in torturing Brad about how he had to fight Bugard on the Sunday in the Anaheim, Minnesota game. But he always said that, you know, there'd be sleepless nights. I mean, all fighters talk about this. Did you love all of it, some of it, part of it? Did you love it, John?
The part that I liked was the actual fight. I'll do that any day of the week. You get, like, if I could just wake up and fight, I'm down. But it's the stuff outside of it. Yeah, the night before, the hour before, the sitting on the bench, the anticipation. You just drive yourself crazy. I hated that part. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the sleepless nights are real. I've stayed up many nights in a hotel room, just like laying there, like tossing and turning. It's like 2, 3, 4 in the morning, and it's like, holy shit, I got a game tomorrow, and I can't fall asleep. And then you wake up, you got about 3 hours sleep, and you got to go and fight this guy who probably was doing the same thing the night before. So, yeah, the fear is real. The anticipation is terrible. And then once it's over, there's this sense of relief, that feeling. I remember when I was really nervous to fight Westgarth in L.A. because he knocked some guy out in the AHL, and the guy had like a seizure, and it was like this big yeah. deal, and like he was just cleaning up. And I was like, oh, I got to fight this guy. Like, he just kills people, and I fight, kicked the shit out of him. Like, I really beat him bad. I went in the locker room. I was like, oh, I'm fine. Like, I just kind of got the juju's out. I was like, okay, I'm good. It's just like,
that was
no better feeling than getting it out of the way, but man, it's terrible before.
That was a blight. Was that, would that have been like a moment? Regret's a strong word, but I'll use it anyway. Was that one of the things you regret? Like, in a fight, like when you, because I mean, you laid that Westgarth fight was something. When did you ever, like, you know, go back to the penalty box, back to the bench, back to the room and go, oh man, maybe that was too much?
No, I could have really kept going on him. No. If you watched that video, I could have just kept pounding his head against the glass all day. I stopped, and the refs were yelling at me to stop. So I've never regretted a fight just because I felt like I've held up a lot of times.
Right.
There's never once where I really tried to hurt somebody. So it's, no.
Would you have regretted it? Would you have regretted it if you had caught Kessel that day?
No. I probably would have been suspended. But no, I wouldn't have regretted it. No.
What? Okay.
But through that. No, that's the coach's fault. That's not my fault.
Take us through that exchange, because that one will be played forever. What did you say? What did he say?
What people forget is right before that, their big guy, Jamie Devane, who's like 6'6", 240, he fought Corey Tropp, who's like 5'11", 200 pounds. And
yep.
He beat up Corey. And I told Devane before the game, if you're going to fight, you fight me, whatever. So we scored. And Corey was fine to fight, but he's a small guy, and Devane beat the shit out of him, beat him up bad, like broke his jaw. And so I'm fuming the whole time he's on the ice. He's getting helped off, and I'm screaming at the Toronto bench at Carlisle. I said, you put out whoever you want, I'm going to kick the shit out of him right away. I'm screaming at him, and he's like just screaming back at me, and we're going at it. And so I said, okay, whoever you put out is going to get it. And then he gives me this little look, and he puts out Kessel. I'm like, oh, come on. And he puts out, like, yeah, Kessel and, like, the whole first line, like the skilled D. And we had a tough line out there, and our D-men were tough, and I was like, all right. And so I lined up with Phil, and I told my defenseman, I'm like, I'm jumping him. Like, just be ready. We're going to brawl here. And sure enough, the puck, we line up, and I look at Phil. I go, Phil, sorry, buddy. And he's like, what? I'm like, I'm going to jump you. And then the puck dropped, and I shed him immediately, and he just, yeah, everyone knows, he started skating back and hacking me. And I was trying to get him, but I went for him again, and their D-man bum rushing from the side, and I got taken out by the centerman, and I punched somebody in the neck, and he went down. Then I got tackled by two refs, and it was just like a free-for-all. It was great.
In a preseason game, nonetheless.
Well, that's why I did it. Yeah, I'm not going to do it in the regular season. It's preseason. Who cares? You got to set the tone.
Oh, man.
All right, listen, John, what do you want to do now? I mean, obviously, we imagine you'll be an active part of this flick that they're making of your life. But, like, you did a little TV stuff for TSN, I guess it was. What do you want to do? You want to do more, like, because honestly, like, if I can get you on NBC here in the States, like, please come on NBC here in the States. We need new voices.
Yeah,
oh,
well, I don't think I'm going there as long as Milbury's there.
Oh yeah, but I was gonna ask you about that actually. Like, this is a
great TV, but yeah,
I agree with you. This is very, very inside hockey and inside podcast, but what went through your mind when you talked to Roenick that day after Roenick had given you the gears for, like, months leading up to that All-Star game?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it is what it is. He just sees a mouth, and he likes to talk shit, and I understand that. He likes to stay in the spotlight, and I get it. I like being in the spotlight, too, sometimes, but it's like you don't carve other players that much. Like, it's just, you know, come on, be a good guy. You can say it once or twice and get your point across. You don't have to harp on and beat a dead horse. Like, he really went out of his way to light me up a few times. So, yeah, then they asked me to do an interview with him between periods. I was like, oh, okay, great. And then I made Bernsie stick around for the interview. I was like, you're Stan. I'm going to sucker this guy in the interview.
But you're right about Ewan Milbury. Like, I think that there's definitely a place for your voice in the hockey media as a former player, as a funny ass guy. So I hope that's what you're looking for, man. I hope that you find it, because I think you were really good on TSN during that stuff.
I know. I'm trying to find a link to Sportsnet. I just don't know anybody who works there. So we'll see.
I'm trying.
I'd really get in on.
I'm trying, John. I'm trying. Hey, last one for me, and then I'm sure Greg will have one as well. I always find that that people that play your position and played your position generally feel as if they are misunderstood, and they don't get a chance ultimately to have their say and describe who they are. And there's a lot of sort of mistakes that people make about them and wrong assumptions. What are some of the things that people in your mind misunderstand about you? That'll be my last question today.
Well, yeah, I think we just get pigeonholed, people in my position. People just have this, you know, persona of us. We're these tough guys. We don't really have feelings, per se. And we just, like, are these hard-ass guys who just all we do is fight and think about fighting, and we just go out there to hurt people. And I think that's couldn't be further from the truth. If I've been around a long time. I've talked to a lot of guys. I've played against a lot of tough guys. And for the most part, they're fairly smart people. They know what they have to do, and they do their job. It's like, we're the guys who have to claw and fight to stay in the league. We were the smart ones who started fighting. And we're very articulate. Like, a lot of guys, like George Parros and Kevin Westgarth, they were Princeton grads. Like, they're really, really smart guys. And just because we kind of find this little niche in hockey to stick around doesn't mean we're, you know, stupid, or we don't know how to play hockey, or I think we just need a little respect. That's all we really want, is just a little respect, that people acknowledge that we're hockey players.
The one little editorial that I'll add to that is, the one thing that I really liked about your presence at the All-Star game is one of the drums that I've been beating, and Greg can back this up, since we started this podcast, and I've said this my entire life, hockey is one of those sports, maybe the ultimate sport, where you have to be so good just to be considered bad. Like, to be players 725 in the NHL, like, just to get to the NHL, regardless of what your position is, you have to be such, because everyone's got the story. Oh, man, I played with this guy who was a fourth liner career in the NHL. We couldn't lift up a stick. We couldn't get the puck off of him. Like, you have to be such a good player just to get into that game in the first place, which is why I was really happy you scored two goals at the All-Star game. Like, to me, you know, the Kane fight was fun. You getting there was fun. But to me, you scoring two goals, and I know it's a shiny game and all that, but for you to do what you did there, to me, put a big smile on my face.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, when I did get sent down, I was working the power play. I was doing penalty kill. I was playing 22 minutes a night in the AHL. I got, like, player of the week for my team a few times. Like, I was one of the better players on my team. And then I go back up to the NHL, I'm back to being the worst player in the league. It's like, okay, I'm actually, like, a decent hockey player. Like, it's funny, we do, like, a league here Sunday nights. I just skate once a week Sunday nights. And the guys that came in, they're like, oh, this, we'll skate right by this guy. The old-timers are warning me, like, oh, this guy, he played for University of Wisconsin for half a season. I'm like, okay, like, I did play in the NHL. Like, I'm okay. Then I'll go out there and bury, like, seven goals if I want to. And everyone's like, holy cow, like, what? And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm not bad. Like, it's, everyone's surprised I can skate backwards and forwards and, like, do stuff. I'm like, what do you think I do? Like, doing it my whole life.
I don't have a question. I just want to thank you for all of it. Like, you know, your jersey's sold out. No, seriously, like, your jersey's sold out, the storybook stuff, you getting carried off the ice, like, all that. Listen, this whole thing worked out beyond any of our collective imaginations, I'm sure, but, like, if it ain't you, it's not working out the way it did. And it just was, there's very few, like you said, like, we also have a certain adversarial relationship with the National Hockey League at times, and, you know, there's very few things in the NHL where you walk away from it and you're like, wow, that was something I've never seen before, and in my perfect vision of how it would play out, that's exactly how I thought it would play out. And, like, that's the All-Star game was that, man. Like, not a single person walked out of that All-Star game thinking that wasn't a moment that they're always going to cherish as hockey fans.
Yeah, and you guys were a huge part of that. Like, so it's kind of cool how it worked out. It all started out with everyone kind of hating on everybody, and now it's just, it worked out perfect. You know, it was just kind of the perfect storm, and I thank you guys for getting the ball rolling, even though I was just so upset at you at the beginning, but it worked out well. I made some new friends, I can say that.
And for sure, and now you join Marty Brodeur as like the only two guys in hockey history that had a rule named after him. Well, I guess in Sean Avery too. You can't swing your stick in somebody's face either.
Yeah. So I'll take it.
Congrats. We got to get you on more regular. We're up against it. John, thanks so much for stopping by. And listen, best of luck. And we haven't even mentioned your book coming out. Give a quick plug for your book.
Oh yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Dude.
Give me some love.
Come on, promo a go. Let's go. Sell.
Yeah. Go. A guy like me. Go buy him.
All right. There you go.
That's it. I don't know.
The last 30 minutes has been the ad for the book. Now go buy it, dummies.
Dude who wrote that book did a bunch of Michael Phelps books, I think, right?
Yeah, no, he's a good writer. We worked actually a long time on that, and it was good. I think it turned out pretty well.
Nice. Awesome. So there you
go. Best of luck, bud. We'll get you on more regular, and we'll catch up real soon.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, my new friend, John Scott.
See? Told you everything was going to be fine.
Yay.
It did work out great. Like, they were uncomfortable. I'm sure you had many uncomfortable moments professionally. I've talked about on this podcast how I've had a couple of very uncomfortable moments last year professionally because of this.
Oh, me too.
Some surprising uncomfortable moments where I really wondered about what was going to happen to me.
Well, I think
honestly, it worked out great. It worked out great for John. It worked out great for the NHL. It worked out great for the All-Star game.
To pull the curtain back, I had one series of uncomfortable moments leading up to going to the All-Star game, mostly with media, other media, primarily with other media.
I know.
And then when I got to the All-Star game, I had a whole different experience of uncomfortable moments with folks that run the National Hockey League, who I hadn't heard a damn peep from during the months leading up to the All-Star game. Then when I got there and I was face to face, it was like, you're the guy who did all this, put us through hell. And blah, blah, blah.
We've been through it a million times. Listen, thanks for John for stopping by. And now that you're back, you're all married up, you're all honeymooned up, we can start doing more podcasts.
Yay.
I know Sammy's up against it because he's got to bounce and produce a show on The Fan.
Real quick.
I got to go do TV and get pretty.
Real quick. So if you don't have my book, Take Your Eye Off the Puck, here's the deal. Grab the book. Send me a copy of the receipt, okay, to wishhockeybook@yahoo.com, or just hit me on Twitter, okay? If you buy the book between Thanksgiving and December 26th,
you get a foot massage.
And you send me the receipt. No, even better. You get an audio chapter of the book by me, but it's not going to be like a straight ahead reading. It's going to be the usual tangents and nonsense. And you get, I worked this out with Kennedy over at Puck Talks, you get the historic missing episode of MVSW from the World Cup of Hockey Puck Talks.
Really?
We never actually aired, yeah.
Oh, wow. That is
so
available?
Me and you, CJ.
Oh, wow.
The two international guys.
So who do I invoice for that then?
You can send it to...
I'll send it to 1234 Shangri-La Lane.
You can send them to my representatives, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
CO T. Uth Ferry. Okay, we'll send that off right away.
You get my thanks and congratulations for being such a good friend.
Love you, Greg Wyshynski.
I love you too, Jeff Merrick. And I love you, Sam. And I love my new friend, John Scott. So thanks for joining us.
Yay.
And hey, listen, do you want to plug anything? And by the way, do you do anything at Sportsnet where your life's going to be in danger from the ceiling falling on you?
No, but the boys are wearing hard hats, which was hilarious today. But I am working at a studio next to that one today, so I'm going to make sure the ceiling's intact before I get on set.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.